The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Weird World Weekly, a production of GalacticNetcasts.com. I'm Dave Nelson, and with me as always, Mr. Matt Stein. Whenever I say it that way, I think I feel like I'm Wayne and Garth. Because doesn't Wayne say, with me as always, is Garth? Or is that somebody else or something else?
I think it says, with me as always, my excellent co-host Garth or something.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I love Wayne's World, so you can... We can Wayne's World it up as much as you want.
Did you watch the 40th anniversary last week?
I missed it when it was on. I DVR'd it Friday night, and then I watched it yesterday. And Celebrity Jeopardy was funny.
I thought that was the best bit of everything, was the Celebrity
Jeopardy. Absolutely. Hands down. What kind of burned my ass was it was 3 hours, and I probably watched about a half an hour's worth because I didn't want to sit and listen to these people talk, and all the montages were kind of cool, but I got sick of watching it. Just because I've seen, you know, so much of it, but I guess it was all in the nostalgia of the past 40 years and what they've done. So.
They should have done less clips and more sketches involving past cast members. Like, and this is not my original idea. I was listening to somebody else and they were talking about this. How cool would it have been to, like, bring in one generation character into another generation's character's sketch? You know, because this is your chance of a lifetime to get like a Bill Murray character involved with a Will Ferrell character.
Yeah,
you know,
no, that's a valid point. So you could have, I couldn't really do it that well with those two, but you know, you could have Will Ferrell doing Harry Carey in, you know, a current sketch.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they missed an opportunity right there.
They really did, but. They probably still made money hand over fist, so what? What do they care?
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get down to making some money ourselves. This is the show where we discuss the weird, the odd, the strange, the unusual, and deliver it to you in under 15 minutes or less. We decide what we're going to talk about each week by spinning the wheel of weird, and your choices on that wheel are paranormal, mythological. That's subjects from either our time period or any time in the past, really. Conspiracy theories and the grab bag, which is where everything else kind of falls. So, Matt, do you want to give the old wheel of weird a spin and see what we're going to talk about today?
Yeah, I do, Dave.
Don't sound so aggressive.
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead. You don't have to flex your muscles before you do it. I'm just saying.
I did do a few push-ups before we started, so.
All right. Where is it going to land? Oh!
Mythological.
Cool. Let's start the timer. 15 minutes or less. That's your guarantee. So here we go. The legend of Spring-Heeled Jack. Have you ever heard of it, Matt?
Not really, but reading some of the notes you have, it reminds me very loosely of a video game that just came out that is supposed to be a pile of steaming crap, which is the Order 1886.
Mm-hmm.
Deals a lot with, from my understanding, and I kind of gave up on trying to figure out what it was when I heard it was really bad, but it's like the whole London and werewolves, that type of thing.
Okay.
No, so it's kind of a good one that we're doing this right after it came out.
London in the 19th century is a very cool time because there's so many neat stories that come from that time period. You know, like... Sherlock Holmes kind of comes from that time period. Jack the Ripper comes from that time period. So it's very, and then there was a lot of innovations also in the 19th century. So it was a time of change and time for myths and legends to be born, including the legend of Spring-Heeled Jack. So reports of the unknown leaping figure, that's where the Spring-Heeled comes from, began in southwest London in 1837. The descriptions of the strange character made it out to the mainstream. See, this was written, I actually got this from a British website. So it's written kind of in British-y type words. And
we have two friends that live in Sheffield, which is like 3 hours north of London. And my favorite thing to do is just to talk to them because we both talk in our native country slang.
Yeah.
So she'll say something. She's like, oh, there's this store down the street and it's so Brill. And I'm like, what the hell are you saying? I'm like, speak American, damn it.
That's brilliant, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So that means it's cool. Yes. And I'm like, what the hell? And now I'm getting it, but
yeah.
I could see how that would be confusing.
Okay. So let me start over again. So
sorry.
No, it's okay. The reports were of a guy in a shiny suit with helmet and cloak, fiery eyes, hands like iron claws, and the ability to spit flame. The devil-like, he was described as devil-like, was the only description given of the strange figure that escaped with incredible leaps and bounds after attacking Polly Adams, a farmer's daughter who worked in a South London pub. The same description was given of the assailant of another woman, but wasn't until early 1838 that the rumors were terrifyingly confirmed. Okay, so moving from 1837 to 1838, that is when the mayor, Sir Lord Cowan, drew public attention to a letter that he had received from a resident giving details of an attack by the so-called Spring-Heeled Jack. This public acknowledgement of the rumors by the Lord Mayor immediately led to a flood of letters from individuals who had been too frightened and embarrassed to report their own encounters previously. Now, I have a theory about this. Whenever you make something mainstream, bring it to the attention to the masses, I think that's where it really takes off. Because maybe these stories were true. Maybe these people actually had encounters with Spring-Heeled Jack. But I think people like to kind of bandwagon it a little bit. Do you know what I mean? And kind of make up stories or exaggerate.
Yeah, it's like the concept of the telephone game. You know, I tell you something, you tell someone else something, they tell someone yada, 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 so on and so forth. By the time it gets to the end, it's so convoluted because things get lost in translation.
Exactly. I mean, the original story could have been just a guy in a cloak, and that's it. And through all the tellings, the whole devil-like description, spitting flame, fiery eyes, and iron claws, all that stuff could have been added afterwards.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that is the definition of the telephone game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So the stories continued. On a February night of the same year, Jane Alsup, who lived with her father and two sisters, was assaulted by a devilish, some say, alien.
Uh-oh.
Who spat blue and white flames at her and scratched and tore at her with iron claws, only to leap away into the darkness when one of her sisters called for help. Less than a month later, Lucy Scales and her sister met Jack as they walked home through the Green Dragon Alley in Limehouse. A tall, cloaked figure leaped from the shadows and belched blue flames into Lucy's face, blinding her and causing her to collapse. Now, that might have just been a really drunk person with really bad breath.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of like a logical explanation for blue flames, and there really is none.
No.
Even just flames in general, you know, unless that person spit fire, you know what I mean, where they shot, you know, they had a candle or something, and they were drunk with a mouthful of liquor, and they spit it, and that's how he blew fire. But
that's the most normal explanation. Now, giving this story the benefit of the doubt, it is possible that maybe a person did dress up in a weird costume just to kind of make a name for themselves and to start a legend. Because how cool would that be to start a legend? You know, you could be the guy, you could never really tell anybody, but, you know, in your mind, you're like, I'm the guy who started the Spring-Heeled Jack legend, you know?
Yes, but I feel like if you start a legend with no actual basis for its existence, you cannot tell people you started it because then everyone knows it's fake and you lose your credibility.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I said.
So you'd really only tell yourself in the mirror because you couldn't tell anybody.
Yeah. But haven't you ever had a sense like of a job well done, like, you know, giving yourself a pat on the back, like, you know what, I kicked ass on this certain project?
Oh, absolutely. But our human nature is to tell everyone.
Okay.
You know, you do something good, you do something well-recognized, you want to go and tell everyone because you want, whether people admit it or not, everyone wants to be recognized for their accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
no matter how humble the person, you enjoy being told, hey, good job, you did good on this. So if you do something well recognized, such as create Spring-Heeled Jack, I feel like human nature is to go and tell everyone, like, hey, I came up with this, and now this is this huge thing.
Okay, here's another theory of mine. Good points, Matt. My theory is maybe he was, because we know that there's been fiction based on this character. So maybe he was a writer of some kind and wanted to cash in on a legend. So he created it and then wrote stories about it. He was like a newspaper columnist or something like that. And that was his job.
And that sounds actually very likely because of the time period. You don't have the internet where within 10 minutes of doing something, the entire world can see what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little more gestation period and there's more ability for things to get stretched. So like you said, he could have just been a guy in a cloak and maybe he, you know, like taped something metal to his hands and it just kind of looked like metal claws.
Yeah.
And he'd spit, you know, liquor on a flame and it quote unquote shot fire. And then over time it just was like, oh, you know, he jumped 100 feet and he had red eyes and he could breathe fire. And
you know, steampunk is really popular.
Yes.
This totally sounds like if they were to make this story into a movie of some kind, a perfect steampunk story, because imagine a guy like rigging up all this stuff and making it all be able to fit under his costume, you know, like he's got some kind of, he rigged something to cause the blue flame, and then he's got like, he's got special gloves with metal fingers, you know, does something with glasses to make your eyes look red. It'd be the perfect kind of movie to bring back the legend of Spring-Heeled Jack to the mainstream again.
Yeah, I agree. It's a logical idea too, because it can be made kind of mythological and out there, and it can also be made. It can be given legitimacy, like the latest Batman trilogy, you know, the Dark Knight trilogy. I enjoyed it the most because it made Batman seem a little more normal.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't like a superhero with superpowers. Like, you know, he went and he trained, and that's how he became so agile and able to fight and all this stuff. And through the money and how he got the cars and all that stuff. So I think making a steampunk Spring-Heeled Jack would be really cool because it would give it kind of the same feel.
Yeah. So sightings of Spring-Heeled Jack continued off and on for 66 years. And that's pretty much it. The last supposed sighting was like back in the 1980s. So I guess that figure of 66 years is not exactly correct. I think continuously for 66 years, and then it kind of made a comeback in the 20th century. So,
which, if it was just a person dressing up, you know, Spring-Heeled Jack 1 could have died, and then 100 years later, someone was like, "Oh, I want to bring this back." And you
that's
know,
one of the
up.
That's one of the theories. That's yep. exactly one of the theories. Okay, so that is it for that's pretty much it for this edition of Weird World Weekly. If you have any kind of feedback and theories on Spring-Heeled Jack, we would love to hear them. Call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966, or email galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Go to galacticnetcasts.com, find our episodes there. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher, and the TuneIn radio app. And if you're on iTunes, please, if you like the show, give us a 5-star review and say something positive, because that helps us get more listeners. We'd really appreciate that. All right, Matt, that's going to do it. Until next time, what do you want to do?
Keep it weird, Dave.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
See ya.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.